My name is Laureen. I work as a consulting soil scientist in Alaska, and one of the projects I've been working on is tundra rehabilitation in the Arctic on the North Slope in the oil fields up there. And this talk, part of the reason I'm wanting to have this talk is this is something that we have not figured out. And so through this talk, I would love it if you guys would put your heads into thinking about things and questions that I pose, because I'm looking for ideas. And if any of you guys have any, I'd love to hear them. Just to give you some context of where we are, sorry, Texas, but so Anchorage is in south central Alaska, and Prudhoe Bay and the Kuparuk oil fields are on the Arctic coast, so it's like traveling from Missouri to the middle of Minnesota to get up there. So in the oil fields, there's a bunch of different types of disturbance that happen. One is gravel removal areas where there have been exploratory oil well pads that have been removed. Backfilled reserve pits are where they used to, they don't do this anymore, but they used to just dump all their drilling waste into a pit. And now, because it causes more damage to remove it than to just bury it, they bury it in place and cap it. Gravel mines, of course, for operations up there, and the spills, which we all know about. And then there's utility trenches. Oftentimes on the roads, there's overhead power lines, and they can't get the equipment across, so they bury the lines up there. Overburden and tundra stockpiles. This particular picture is from a gravel mine where they removed all the overburden and set it aside, and they wanted to make sure it was stabilized. And then there's various disturbed tundra. In this instance, a truck went off the road, but it has to be rehabilitated as well. So the goals of tundra rehabilitation, promoting stability has to do with the thermal regime in the soil. Of course, everything up there is permafrost, and so the idea is to make sure you don't have any thawing of the permafrost and also keep the land surface at an even level. We want to establish plant communities of native plant species, and it has to be comprised predominantly of native tundra species that are up there. Getting rid of the drilling waste, cleaning the place up, basically, and backfilling it with clean material. And that can only be done when possible. A lot of these sites are really remote and can only be accessed by helicopter. And so those sites we can't backfill. And then, and that's what I mean by top dressing with organic rich overburden. It can only be done in the sites that are on the road and if there is available organic rich overburden, which is hard to come by. And when we do these rehabilitation sites, we have performance standards. So our performance standards are to have 10% total live vascular cover, excluding seeded grasses. We have to have 5 native species at 0.2% cover or greater. So it's not much, and that's in 10 years. And so some of the sites aren't even achieving that, 10% cover in 10 years. So to give some information about the setting, of course it's cold. This picture was taken 2 weeks ago when I was up there on the slope. It is very much winter there already. This snow was fresh snow just 2 weeks ago. Mean annual precipitation is very low, less than 18 centimeters a year. It's a polar desert. There's very low evapotranspiration. It's very flat, as you can see. And, of course, everything's underlain by permafrost. These are all the oriented thaw lakes that are up there. They are all over the landscape. So all of these factors combined make for, it's basically all wetlands. It's just this huge, extensive wetland. It's hard to find anything up there that isn't a wetland. And also a very, very short growing season. You can see in the bottom of the picture, there's the patterned ground. You can see it's kind of a honeycomb shape. I'll talk about that in just a little bit more. This shows an active drilling pad and what they look like when they're under operation. And then the bottom right picture shows what it looks like when the gravel has been removed. In that site in particular, the tracks you see all over it are caribou tracks. The animals really like these sites, and they congregate on them, potentially because they're a little bit warmer. So we're left with this bare mineral soil. There's no organics in it. There's a little bit of gravel left, so the texture isn't that great. They're also low in nutrients. There's not a lot of nitrogen or phosphorus in the soils. They're low in moisture. One of the tricks in this place is making sure that when you remove the gravel, you leave it at about 6 inches above grade because there's going to be some settlement. It reduces the albedo when you expose it, and you have this bare ground, and so it warms it up a bit. And if you remove too much gravel, you end up getting low spots that turn into lakes. And we have quite a few sites up there that now are almost entirely lakes. So you have this fine line balance. And sometimes when you do leave it above tundra grade a bit, it dries it out because all the water will run out of that area. And then, of course, the high gravel content also creates a problem, just because we don't want to remove too low. There's also, when we're seeding up there, there's really limited plant material available. So they tried to do native grass cultivars down in South Central Alaska, and they found that they didn't work that well. We all collect seed up there on site in various places, but it's hard to find seed sources. It's really labor intensive and it's really, really expensive. And then there's also a lack of indigenous species up there that are adapted to disturbed areas. So it's hard to even find plants that'll thrive in these disturbed areas. And then there's grazing pressure on top of that. The caribou are not such a problem, but the geese, we get all the migratory geese end up in Alaska, and they love young shoots of plants, and they will just eat down any rehab site like crazy. So here's some examples of the pattern ground. This kind of ground system happens because there's a lot of ice under the ground, and as the ice wedges grow, it squeezes the ground up around it, and you get this kind of patterned feature across the ground. It has really high ice content, and then also it perches the water on top, so you have all this perched water on top. That's why even though with very little precipitation, it's still a really wet area. Here's some examples of a soil core and then also a soil profile that show the ground ice in there. And so when an area gets exposed, this ice melts and the ground subsides. And this is one of the big problems that we're facing, especially in the trenched areas. When they're trenched and this ice gets exposed, it fills with water. The water has a greater heat capacity and heat flux, and it melts the ice around it, and the whole area surrounding this tiny, narrow trench slumps. And so it becomes a big problem. So here's some examples of some of the subsidence that happens up there. So in gravel pads, like I was saying, if you remove the gravel too low, you end up with these lakes and ponds and the trenches as well. They end up sometimes these streams, especially if they connect to water bodies and you have flowing water. The one on top, the trench picture on the upper right, those stakes that are in that picture show the trench originally was very narrow, maybe 8 to 12 inches across, and then it widened up. People came in and backfilled, trying to fill it back in, and it widened again. And now it's much wider than it was originally. So sometimes when we're trying to fix things, we actually make things worse. So in this site, you can see a line that runs from the right-hand side down to the lower left-hand side. The stuff on the right-hand side of the slide is seeded. It's been revegetated with grass. And this was years ago. People thought grass was a really good idea because you got lots of great cover right away. But after about 3 years, the grass would die off. Then you'd have all this dead litter and this root mass that would prevent native plant colonization. And so a lot of these sites end up just kind of being litter, grass litter, and not much more. So there's a soil sampling protocol going on up there, taking grab samples. So choose several points and then choose three samples around that point, collect them together. The pH range is generally very high. The soils are very calcareous up there because of the runoff from the Brooks Range from the south. And in the past, they were using Bray and Olson extract for their phosphorus tests, and so they were getting these really, really low phosphorus readings. And somebody finally pointed out that using Malic 3 was a lot better idea, and so that's what they're using now. But from the time before when they were getting the low phosphorus readings, there's still some contractors up there who insist on using high phosphorus fertilizer, 0450, which is it doesn't provide any nitrogen, which is something we're trying to figure out, because the nitrogen is also very low up there. In the pictures, this shows a site that in 2005, it had been recently capped. The work is all done in the winter. They go in the winter. That's another trick, is trying to get your grade correct in the winter, because you can't drive on the tundra in the summer. You'd end up making a bigger mess. So you have to go in winter and do the work, and then in the summer come in and seed the place. The picture on the bottom shows a site that was fertilized 400 pounds per acre at a 10-20-20 fertilizer, and then with 6 pounds per acre of Arctogrostis latifolia when they were still using the grass seeding. So the fertilizer treatments that they're doing, a lot of the sites now, they don't even do any soil sampling. And the reason they decided to stop doing soil sampling was because they found that a lot of times the results were showing them the same thing. They needed to fertilize a whole lot. And so they just stopped doing soil sampling. So one of the things I'm working on is trying to get them to go back into soil sampling. So the contractors choose what fertilizer to use. And like I said, some of them use like 0450. And they just do it routinely at this point. The pictures show a site that was fertilized with 20-20-10 at 200 pounds per acre and not seeded. So this site was just allowed to naturally colonize. But the cover, you can see it's very, very low, 4.3%, and that's in 4 years. So it's unlikely that that site is going to reach its 10% cover by 10 years. It's going to be a real trick. So this site shows another site. This one was fertilized only as well and naturally colonized, and the cover is even worse. The work was done in 2007, 2008, and 2009 it was fertilized. Will it meet its performance standards by 2018? Kind of unlikely. You can see the soil texture is super gravelly, and that's about as good as the cover gets on that entire site. This is just a picture of the native tundra up there and what we'd ideally like those sites to end up looking like. And that's the last slide of my talk. And at this point, I would love to pose questions to you or if you have questions for me. And I'd love to hear any of your ideas that you have, because I'd love to take them back and maybe apply them, because this is a knowledgeable bunch. Yes. Well, a lot of these sites, So the question was, does applying fertilizer, which is essentially a salt, exacerbate the problem of melting ice? I don't think it does, because the fertilizer basically stays on the surface and doesn't get down into the ground ice. We did, 2 weeks ago when it was snowing, we did spread fertilizer over 2 inches of snow. It was a last-minute project, and that did melt the snow. But, yeah, I don't think it would bother the ice.
Any other questions?
Yes, and there are. And the biggest difference is that the native tundra has a huge organic layer. And so that's basically what the plants are growing in. And the mineral soils underneath that organic layer are pretty much the same. Nothing has changed. So what we're down to is the bare mineral soil. Yes?
A couple of possibilities would be you change the particle size of the gravel areas, bringing in more sandy, silty parent material to mix with that, and therefore changing the dynamics of the system in that way, or turf grass type. People who run golf courses actually bring in the mats. And I mean, South Prudhoe Bay, there you get down into the Brooks Range, you could grow those mats.
Well, we do tundra sodding. And So what we do is at the gravel mine sites and the areas that they're about to mine, we'll harvest the tundra sod and transport it. And that's usually done for the spill sites. Because it costs about $3 million an acre to do that. The tundra sod's about this thick. It has to be cut with special equipment, moved with a loader. It's not like turf grass sod, unfortunately. But, yeah, and that was an idea that came up, and everybody, and those sites are beautiful.
Well, let's stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.